My grandfather grew up in Jacksonville, Texas back in the 1950s, and if you've never been there, you wouldn't be missing much. He grew up the eldest of five brothers and sisters on a farm with my great-grandparents. He passed away about a year ago, but I wanted to share a story he told me when I came home from college break. Naturally, Grandpa didn't come from much. His parents' generation suffered through the Great Depression, and farmers didn't fare off too well. But being the gritty Texas farm folk that they were, they thrived in it. Having a farm and a big pasture surrounded by pine trees made for a good childhood, as he told me. He would reminisce about the times of gathering the whole town's kids and playing baseball games to pass the hot summer days. Though as his health deteriorated, he began to talk more deeply with me, and would talk to me about life lessons, and one thing in particular, fear. He asked me if I had ever heard of witches. I said of course, but he stopped me, and as serious as he could be, he asked me again. Listen, I ain't talking about no Halloween characters. I'm talking about actual witches. I could tell it made him uncomfortable talking about it. It really screwed him up as a kid. He explained to me that he had three encounters growing up. The first time he saw her, he was 10. He and his siblings were playing around sundown. They were outside in the pasture. About 200 yards away from him, there was a tree line where a forest began. He said that he saw a dark floating silhouette by the tree line. He couldn't focus on it because of the lack of lighting, but he swore to me that the figure's head was cocked at a perfect 90-degree angle looking right at him. He said it was inhuman. He remembers rushing the little ones back inside and telling his parents. Their parents never let them out after sundown again. The second encounter came 2 years later. He and a friend who was their closest neighbor would walk on a trail through the forest to school every day. He said it was about a 2.5-mile walk. One day as they were walking home, they saw a homeless person covered in quilts walking on the left side of the trail. Being very confused and uneasy as to why somebody they didn't know who was completely submerged in dirty quilts would be walking on this trail in the woods. As the person passed, he said they both smelled something that was a mix of rot and sour. Upon smelling the putrid odor, Grandpa said that he became very dizzy and incoherent, and the neighbor boy felt the same way. A few moments later, they hear a sinister giggle from behind them. They turned to see this person, who was still completely hidden by the quilts, began running after them. He said the thing didn't stop chasing them until they busted down the front door of the farmhouse. He never saw the neighbor boy again after that day. The incident was widely spread around town and quickly became a warning for all those who adventure in the woods. The third and last time he saw the witch was when he was a senior in high school. Grandpa was going to be a Division I football player for the University of Oklahoma and quite frankly was the hometown hero. He said that he just met my grandmother and really wanted to enjoy the rest of his senior year. So he attended a prom after party in the woods with his classmates. Being that his class only had 60 people, everyone was there. He admitted that he got pretty wasted that night. He went to go take a leak a couple of yards away from the bonfire. While he was draining his lizard, he heard shuffling noises from nearby. As he tried to focus, he made out a small hut through the trees. There was a stream of smoke emanating from its chimney. He smelled a stench that he recognized from when he was 12. He told me that nothing else could have sobered him up so quickly. He proceeded to investigate the hut deep in the forest. As he approached, a dark figure appeared from the shadows. But he told me that no matter how hard he tried, he never could quite make it out. All of a sudden, the figure started to whisper. It intensified, and he felt a burning sensation on his arm. He felt as if his body was being branded. The figure then slowly faded back into the darkness of the forest. He became frantic and realized that he was now 100 yards away from everyone. He said that there was no way he had wandered off that far. He began screaming for help. He admitted to me that he even wet his pants. The creepiest part about this story is that the police investigated the hut that my grandpa discovered. Inside was a gore fest. There was dead animals strewn about the floor, as well as human remains, who some believed to be the missing neighbor boy. They never found out who was responsible, and my grandfather moved away shortly after. My grandfather was a fantastic man, and I miss him a lot. He was the most kind, loving man I ever knew, and I know that he wouldn't make any of this up. And I've also always wondered where he got the burn mark on his arm. Some backstory before I begin. I work for a conservation corps based out of Austin, Texas. We do a lot of environmentally based projects, such as trail maintenance, wildfire fighting, invasive species removal, etc. One day this past spring, we were working in Jasper, Texas, doing invasive species removal on Nature Conservancy property. We were clearing any and all species that were not longleaf, shortleaf, or loblolly pine trees. The property was about 60 acres, so we were flying through this project trying to complete it. Most of our chainsaws had run into problems and were not working properly, so we ended up having to split up into groups. I worked in a crew of 8, and we only had 4 saws running, so groups of 2 was the reasonable way to run things. I was working with one of my co-workers, Joe. We were on an area of property that the crew had not been to yet. Our job was to cut a trail about a mile into the property and proceed to make our way around the 60 acres. We began to saw our way in at around 7:45 a.m. We had to hike in our fuel, bar oil for the chainsaw, our wedges, and our packs. We each carried a hatchet in case we needed an extra wedge or for any other reason, as well as flagging to mark the trail. At around 9, we had reached our halfway point and decided to take a short break. I shut off the chainsaw, took my chaps off, and drank some water to cool off. I placed my pack against the tree, and Joe did the same. We began shooting the shit. Nothing unusual. Just some stupid banter to get through the day. As we were talking, something snapped in the brush about 30 feet to the west of us. I instantly stopped talking, and grabbed our hatchets. This area was known to have wild boar. We knew what to do in this situation if a wild boar was to show up. Nevertheless, we were scared. We slowly walked over to the brush, and as we approached, another snap came from our south, about 30 feet in the dense brush. At that point, we were starting to get nervous. We had no plan if 2 boar were to show up. We decided that it was best to grab our packs and find our way back to the crew. They would understand us ceasing work for 2 boar. As we slowly made our way back to our packs, snaps came from every direction. We had nowhere to go. My first thought was to grab the chainsaw and turn it on. I revved up the engine, but it promptly died. Great, another saw down. In simple terms, we were screwed. We decided to make a run for it at that point. I counted down from 5, and we both ran down the trail as fast as we could into the thick swampy brush. We sprinted as fast as humanly possible towards camp, but something made us stop. Joe and I, at the same moment, stopped running. We stood there, not knowing what to do. Joe began to look around frantically, and as he did, I felt a cold breeze wisp down my back. A deep voice whispered something into my ear, but before I could even comprehend the words, I took my hatchet and swung blindly behind me. To my surprise and terror, it struck something hard. As I turned my head to see what creature had just met its doom, I heard Joe gasp. As my head swiveled, behind me was a tree. This may sound normal, but we had cleared this area of all life not but 30 minutes prior. The chances of us missing a 2-foot-wide, 60-foot-tall tree were 0. Realizing that this was only a tree, I looked back at Joe, ready to laugh. But as soon as I turned around, Joe was gone. I chuckled and started to call out his name. After about 2 minutes, I began to freak out. I began frantically searching the surrounding area, but Joe seemed to have vanished into nothing. After another 10 minutes of searching, I decided that he may have been so scared that he ran back to camp, so I began to make my way back. When I arrived, everything was completely normal. Everything but the fact that Joe wasn't there. I told everyone that Joe had gone missing after we had a run-in with some boar. We all spread out. We looked for Joe for an hour before deciding to call the authorities. They arrived shortly after. We set up search parties to find Joe. After about 10 minutes of searching, he was found. Joe sat on a tree stump, pale as the moon, staring off into space. I called out to him, but when he looked at me, I noticed blood running down his stomach. There was a tree branch sticking out of Joe's gut. I sprinted over to him as he fainted and caught him before he hit the ground. The police rushed Joe to the nearest hospital. Before we left, I noticed something odd. Joe had been sitting on a stump of a tree that I had rammed my hatchet into. The tree was no longer standing, and my hatchet was sitting in the dirt, covered in blood. My stomach dropped, and I immediately walked with my crew back to camp, leaving my hatchet behind. We packed up our campsite and left Jasper that night. We were never sent back to that property. Shortly after, an article surfaced in the news of a nature conservancy surveyor who disappeared in the same forest. They found him a week later impaled next to a tree stump. I can only assume it was the same stump that we found Joe next to.
Years ago, I lost my fiancé. I wish I had lost her to natural causes. At least then I would have known that she passed away peacefully. But no, I lost her in that goddamned hell house. I proposed to Julia, my girlfriend of 3 years, that October day. And when she said yes, she made me the happiest man alive. I suggested we drive to Austin for the weekend, with some friends to celebrate, and she agreed. The plan was to drive to Austin after work on Thursday, and arrive at our hotel sometime during the evening, to be able to enjoy the rest of the weekend in full. That Thursday, my friend Josh and his girlfriend Hannah joined us, and we left sometime after 6 p.m. Most of the trip was pretty uneventful. We were met with heavy traffic on our way out to the city, which is not unusual for a city. Just fucking inconvenient. The trip, which usually would take about 3 hours, would easily take 4.5 hours in this traffic. But like I said before, this wasn't unexpected. Aside from the traffic, I love being on the road. Even though I had always lived in the city, there was something about rural backdrops that always captivated me. I know this isn't the greatest thing to admit, but even drinking, I couldn't help but dart my eyes back and forth every once in a while to take in the farms and the cattle that thrive in those areas. These are the last remnants of the way life used to be here in Texas. And being on the road and seeing these sights made me a little nostalgic. The roaring peace we felt as the wind rushed in through the windows was broken when Julia rolled up her window and said, "Look," pointing to a billboard up ahead. I tried to read the billboard as soon as I could. The billboard was a tacky-looking thing for a haunted house that said, "Come experience all of our 13 floors if you dare." I exited a few miles later and turned into an empty parking lot. "I don't know. Looks empty to me," I said. "This place probably doesn't have too many customers because it's in the middle of nowhere." "Which means we will have the whole place to ourselves," Julia said. I sighed. "Okay, then. Let's go check it out." I wasn't too thrilled about this, to be honest. I hated haunted houses. I was always all too aware that there were people pretending to be creatures or ghouls, but Julia loved this stuff, so I went along with it. The place certainly looked impressive, which was odd due to how little traffic I imagined them to get. The house seemed to be a huge-looking office complex, most likely built and then abandoned when the area failed to attract jobs, businesses, and people. We walked up to the front where a grandmotherly old lady greeted us. "Welcome. Is this your first time here?" she asked, to to which we nodded. "Well, you're certainly in for a treat then," she said, and then went into what seemed like a well-rehearsed spiel about safety, no punching of the actors in the house, no running, etc. I rolled my eyes when she said that if we didn't follow the rules, we would become permanent residents of the Hell House, in a spooky voice. We paid our tickets and were ushered in. To be honest, the 12 floors were pretty cool and altogether normal. There was a floor dedicated to a zombie outbreak where we were being chased by moaning zombies, and around every corner or so, one of them would pop out of the most obvious corner and come crawling or simply snap at us. There was the obligatory clown floor, where we were supposed to be in some sort of circus, where the clowns had gone mad and killed everyone. Every room was a tribute of some sort, depicting said massacre of the circus's spectators, and the clowns would stand menacingly in some corner of the room, or they would jump out from some hidden nook or cranny. My favorite floor was the one depicting hell, and one of the rooms was covered in fog, and as we navigated through the floor, demons would rise up from the fog and screech at us. My girlfriend was really into it. She would jump and scream and hug me tight whenever a scare came up, which made me think this wasn't so bad after all. And so it went, until we got to the 13th floor. Usually these types of houses advertise themselves as so scary that you won't make it through all the floors, and I imagined that this was no different. But I thought it had been pretty tame, if well put together, up to this point. Everything changed on the 13th floor. When we got to the 13th floor, we found ourselves in front of a number of doors. The grandmotherly woman from the front was blocking our way, and with a sinister smile said, "Congratulations on making it this far, but the worst is yet to come. Pick a door, any door. It may be the most important decision of your life." I rolled my eyes yet again, but my fiancé and friends were all up for it. So we made our way to four different floors and entered. I walked into a barren room with another door up ahead. The door shut heavily behind me, and I will admit that this made me jump. Then I heard a click as the door locked behind me, and mist started pouring into the room. I figured it was fog to set the mood for the next room, but the fog kept rolling into the room until it suffocated the whole room. The fog became so thick in the room that eventually I had to breathe some of it in, and when I couldn't take it anymore, I started coughing. I heard the door ahead of me slowly swing open, and I made my way towards it. My vision started becoming blurry. My body began to feel heavy. I had never been under the influence, but I had the sneaking suspicion that I had been drugged somehow. I trudged along to the next room, and what I saw there felt straight out of a nightmare. On either side of the room were two-way mirrors. Confused, I looked into them until atmospheric lights illuminated what I was seeing. I saw my friend Josh walk into one of the adjacent rooms, where he was ambushed by a masked figure who swiftly hit him in the back of the head. My friend yelled with pain and slumped to the floor, and the figure lifted him as if he were nothing and strapped him onto a chair, ensuring he couldn't move. I could tell Josh was still dazed from the blow, but his eyes regained some clarity as soon as he saw Hannah crawl into the same room.
"I see our guests have arrived,"
rasped the masked figure. He immediately grabbed Hannah by the neck and tossed her into another chair in front of the one Josh was strapped to.
"Okay, lover boy, you get to pick which one of you two gets to live,"
the masked figure said. "What the fuck is this? Why are you doing this?" Josh screamed, spittle flying everywhere. The masked figure tisk-tisked and put a finger in front of Josh's lips.
"All you have to do is choose."
The figure started circling Josh.
"Your little girlfriend has been drugged with a powerful hallucinogen, which means that she probably doesn't even know where she is at this moment. So,"
he said as he was leaning in and spoke directly into his ear,
"if you pick her to die, she won't even know you killed her. It will stay between the two of us, and you will get to go scot-free."
My friend screamed in frustration. rattling the chair as much as he could. All right. My eyes widened as the masked figure produced a long knife out of nowhere and began stabbing Hannah with impunity. Overkill would hardly describe what actually happened. That was the point where Josh began to cry.
I'm sorry,
he kept saying, until the figure cut his bindings and said with a voice that seemed to gloat,
"You are free to go."
I watched Josh pick himself up and quickly made his way to the door. When he opened it, he was met with gunfire from an unknown source to me. It was so loud, I had to cover my ears and close my eyes. And when I opened them again, I saw the body of my best friend riddled with holes, and the masked man got to the task of moving the bodies. I heard a tap behind me, so I turned to see Julia being brutally beaten by another masked figure. I pounded on the glass. I screamed at them to stop, but this seemed to only make matters worse. They beat her savagely to within an inch of her life. And then they said,
"Your boyfriend is watching this. He's probably enjoying it too."
Hearing this, she began to drag herself to the mirror, and I met her there. She had a hand on the mirror, and I placed my hand there. I sobbed out of frustration that I could do nothing about the current situation. I had barely said, "I love you, Julie," when her body shook as a knife was plunged into her head. I screamed in agony.
"You fucking sons of bitches. I'll kill you all. I'll..."
But I did not get to finish spouting my toothless threats, because I felt a sharp knock on the back of my head, and I felt myself lose consciousness. When I woke up, I was back in my car. It had crashed into a telephone pole, and the police were there. I was booked for driving under the influence, and was told that I was really lucky to have made it out of a crash like that with only a bump on the back of my head. I told them about the haunted house and everything that transpired there, but they told me they didn't find anything on those roads. There was no house, they said. I must have made it up. I tried to move on. I really did. But I couldn't. No way was I going to let them get away with what they did. Today, after 5 years of fruitless searching, I finally found the godforsaken house. And I have enough gasoline to make sure this fucking place burns to the ground.
There's always a reason to be afraid.